Radio.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mike McCafferty, and I just want to talk about the Orville.
Are you insane?
They are insane!
You're in the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
Inaccurate.
But Matt Frostin.
It does like you.
Mr. Kim.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
How you doing, Mike?
Hi, I'm Mike McCafferty, and I'm joined by... State
Jason
your name.
Jason McCarris.
Yes,
and
state...
Ensign McCarris, which, what title did you give me?
I don't know. Ensign McCarris, Yeoman McCarris,
you
I don't
upgraded
know.
Me. You upgraded me last time because I gave you an article or something that you made a podcast out of.
Oh, that's right. I made that angry podcast, which people immediately on Reddit attacked me, and they said, that's not true, because this guy from CBS said that it's actually in-universe.
Oh.
And I was like, so,
oh, okay.
I may be wrong on that, but it was a fiery podcast, and we must never deny passion.
Whether truth is involved, that's another story.
We are in a post-truth world here. It is all about passion. And no more evident than in the show that we're going to talk about that isn't Star Trek.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Seth MacFarlane's passion project, which is the Orville.
Oh, tying passion in. I like your segue.
Well, it is such a passion project. And as we get into it, it'll be so evident. But this is sort of like an adjunct podcast here to I just want to talk about Star Trek. It's such a Star Trek show that we had to have at least one little thing here. Plus, for Jason, this is good because Jason is finally in on the ground floor on this stuff.
This is true. But, I mean, if this stuff actually qualifies as Star Trek, which it clearly doesn't, it's an imitation, but...
Yeah, well...
And when I say imitation, it might actually be better than the real Star Trek at this point, the new one.
This is the thing. This is why we're kind of debating about it.
We'll find out.
So, and someone, I put the question to people on Facebook. I like, did you watch it? Did you like it? And I called it a parody, and someone called it an homage. I'm like, well, maybe that's close enough. You know, maybe that's what it is.
That's fair.
Yeah, because he's not parodying it, really. He's really just
no,
like...
No, he's not making fun of the universe, and he's not making fun of science fiction, really. There's comedy in it, which I thought it would be much more broad comedy constantly. But it's pretty serious at times.
Yeah, this second episode really, it had less comedy and more science fiction than I would think.
Yeah.
But that's not to say this is a perfect show by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
So Jason, you are, see, this is good. Like, you're the ground floor. Like, you know, you've gotten in on this. You've watched the first two episodes. Yeah. And you've never really seen that much Next Generation. So you're not
right.
tainted by that. What was your overall opinion of the pilot and the first episode beyond?
I feel like the pilot was okay. The second episode seemed to kind of solidify things a little better.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't as much need for exposition, although we still had it. We still had to have reminders that the lieutenant is, you know, the little girl is really strong and can break tables.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the alien that's a unisex alien is having a baby via an egg, because that was kind of, you know, all introduced in that one scene where they're standing there in that giant room and he goes one by one. And what's your story? What's your backstory? Tell me now.
The longest scene in the world. Oh, my God. There's like every crew member. Okay. Next, we have our science officer and then the tactician.
I mean, I get it from two perspectives. I get it because it's a comedy bit and he keeps mm-hmm. building on it, you know, as they go through each person and it gets a little more ridiculous or less ridiculous. And then there's also... You know, the need for exposition, which is kind of like slapping you right across the face with it.
Yeah. I feel like we can pull this back a little bit. So overall, like, what would you give it as a grade, letter grade, you know, episode to episode or series wise?
I felt like the pilot was, I mean, it merited like a B-, maybe B-, C+. It was,
okay.
It had amazing, you know, special effects and the cast was very funny. It's, you know, there's definitely some grown moments in there. You know, some of the comedy doesn't quite land, and it's very Seth MacFarlane. I mean, you kind of outlined how and I you're probably gonna, I don't want to steal a line from you, but you were saying he's like, he's in his own role playing, real world role playing game right now with everybody who's around him.
Yeah, no, that's that, and maybe I parroted that off of someone else and went like a step further, but it. So for anyone who doesn't know who Seth MacFarlane is, you don't know anything about, you know, popular culture for the past 15 years then, because he created Family Guy, which got canceled, but then revived on Adult Swim and sort of revived Adult Swim. And they did American Dad, and then he did...
And Fox brought back Family Guy, and it's still going after all these years.
Yeah, it's amazing. It was one of those strange things where it was canceled, and then Adult Swim, because they didn't have a lot of content, just started running the reruns, and they became the highest rated show on cable, basically. Not just on Adult Swim, but it was huge. So Fox brought it back, became immensely successful. Meanwhile, he was doing American Dad, like as the carbon copy with a little more, you know, republicanism to it. And then they're both popular. And then he did the Cleveland Show, which was not as popular.
Didn't quite make it.
No. But he's also done Ted, Ted 1 and Ted 2, A Million Ways to Die in the West.
They're both very successful. Yeah.
Yeah, very successful. And more importantly, he did Cosmos. He executive produces Cosmos, the reboot. I don't know if you saw that, Jason, which was great.
I did. I loved it. Yeah.
It's so good.
I forgot to mention, what was the Western he did with Charlize Theron?
Oh, A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Die in the West, yeah.
I did not see that. Did
we kind of glossed over that, but yeah, I think you might have mentioned it a little
bit. Well, we're being kind, right? It wasn't that good.
Yeah, it didn't do so well.
but it's also sort of endemic of the problems which I have with The Orville, which is that it starred Seth MacFarlane.
Yes.
So he is this empire for Fox. He makes them billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And
well, clearly the guy is very talented too. Not to take anything away from him, because he's a very talented voiceover artist and writer creator. He throws lavish parties where he sings with a big band at his house.
Yeah.
From what I understand. He is a very good singer too. I mean, he's done some Family Guy albums and things like that.
That's a great album.
Super talented.
Yeah.
That Family Guy album's great. But, the point I was going to make is he's not, in my opinion.
I'm sorry. Say that one more time. He's not what?
I was saying he's not the best leading man, in my opinion.
No, that is, And that has never been something that people have been forcing him to be, a leading man. He did A Million Ways to Die in the West, and then they're like, well, let's have a Wahlberg handle Ted, you know. And
well, it's more of like the LARPing thing that you're saying, where he's like, well, if I'm going to do it, why don't I make myself the hero? And why don't I, you know, get the pretty girl in the end and everything? And it makes total sense.
Exactly.
I mean, if I was in this position, I might do that too.
Me too. I mean, I'm doing this Vault the Wonder Deer thing. This animated series I can't mention, but I'm doing this animated series. It's all right. No one's gonna put the two things together. But I'm doing
China
this.
China is gonna find out about this.
Yeah, China, they're gonna be so angry when they hear this podcast. I can tell you for a fact that no one from China listens to this podcast. I get the metrics. I am safe. but I do these animated series, and all the time, all I try to do is put in Star Trek. So he has the keys to the kingdom. He makes them billions of dollars, and he said, I want to do a Star Trek show. And Fox said, absolutely. Sight unseen, here's 13 episodes, here's, you know, $50 million, $100 million, go make your show. And he did. And it kind of looks like it sometimes.
Well, it's a little more complicated than that, right? I mean, I don't know the whole story, but I understand that he really wanted to do a Star Trek show, like seriously, and they told him no.
Yeah. I think...
And so he said, I'll pitch it to Fox and do it as a different thing, and he did. I mean, or is that inaccurate?
I think you might be right at that. I think he might have approached CBS or Paramount and said, hey, guys, let me take the reins on this. And they're like, no, I think we're going to let J.J. Abrams take a swipe at it. And
because, I mean, he's a super huge Star Trek fan, and he was on one of the series, right?
He did.
As a guest star.
Yeah, he did a couple of episodes of Enterprise, a couple little, you know, one-liner roles, and he loved it. That's how Brendan Braga is part of this. He's an executive producer. Right. And if we recall, when he hosted the Oscars, which was not necessarily his best turn, he had William Shatner in his admiral outfit.
That's right.
His captain, his maroon monster maroon outfit.
Yeah.
So, and no, I mean, it's like only Nixon can go to China. Only Seth MacFarlane could make Shatner put that back on again, you know? He doesn't want to be Captain Kirk anymore. But Seth MacFarlane calls and says, hey, for the Oscars, would you do this? He's like, okay.
Tend to find that the older he gets, the less he minds being Captain Kirk. I mean, he used to be really grumpy about it, but the more I see him online now, it's like as long as he can, you know, keep himself relevant, he'll be Captain Kirk as long as people are paying attention.
You know, I think you know, you're probably right about that. Is that in the 70s and 80s he was very resistant to it, yeah. And then when he realized how much money he could make, he did it for the money, and now I think he just does it just for the parody or because it's a whim. You know, I'll put that on, do that again. But I think that in order to be on television like that, Seth MacFarlane had to move heaven and earth.
Well, as a younger man, it's very easy as a younger man to get swept up in wanting to be taken seriously as an actor, and mm-hmm. when you're only going to be known for this one role.
Yeah,
people, you know, that's just very disappointing on a personal level. So I'm sure as a younger person, it really bothered him a lot. I feel like as he gets older, you know, we were trading these. Links back and forth, and there was that one where he's talking to Walter Koenig, interviewing him and trying to get to the bottom of why everybody hated him.
yes
but he does tend to do more Star Trek centric things, I think, just because, you know, well, at this point, who cares, you know?
Yeah, well, I think he realizes that he can leverage it to do his own things for sure. And now he has that balance in his life. That's where he's just like, I don't care anymore. Sure, I'll be Captain Kirk for you if you let me do this thing. Sure. That's cool. So, yeah. But established that Seth MacFarlane. What's that?
Sorry, go ahead.
Well,
I was saying we're starting to get off track. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're ironically, for the first time. For the first time, we're not getting distracted away from Star Trek. We're getting distracted to Star Trek.
To Star Trek.
But this goes to show Seth MacFarlane's pure love of Star Trek. And so he wanted to do this, and so he went to Fox. He said, I want to do a spaceship show where I'm the captain, and it looks a lot like The Next Generation. And they said, well, let's take a look at our ledger books. Yeah, you made us $8 billion. You got it. So they gave him this show. They gave him the Orville.
There are very few coincidences about this, that they've released it at the same time as Star Trek. These things take a lot of time and effort to put together, so it's not like it happened by accident.
This is true.
Not only that, but when you watch the show and you hear the voice of the android character, I'm like, oh, wow, okay. Did they get Brent Spiner to do that? I looked it up. They didn't.
No.
But it's so close to Data that it's ridiculous, his voice.
Oh, yeah. And then they got the guy, Bordas, who is obviously Worf. You know, they have, you know, everybody is definitely channeling some part of Star Trek for Seth.
And I almost felt like the episode we just watched tonight, the second episode, was pretty much directly lifted from Star Trek. The idea that they're going to be, you know, holed up in a museum or kind of, you know, trapped
in a zoo, in a menagerie, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. The menagerie. Yeah. So it felt like he's just kind of co-opting it and making it his own in a certain way, just kind of, you know, making it a little more contemporary in our ideas.
And that was a little disappointing. It was interesting because I had my wife and kids watch it. You know, because it's a pretty family friendly thing. Every once in a while, they say, you know, balls or colon or something like that. And I'm like, well, there's such bad jokes anyways. It's like I can't even.
It did kind of bug me when you'd hear kiss my ass, sir, or something like just stupid stuff like that. I felt like the dialogue could be stronger in some of the.
Before we dig into the episodes, I mean, I do want to say that these two scripts, especially the pilot, read like a first draft. It needed a couple more passes. I mean, that cargo bay scene, there were so many other ways you could introduce all these characters in an interesting fashion.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but instead we spent about 6 minutes going down the line with each character. Right. So, and some of the jokes, they fall so flat. the Elvis line in this last episode.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one to point out. Yeah, like, it really didn't play very well.
Or dibs on the omelet. It's like, I just feel like those were left on the writer's room somewhere and Family Guy or American Dad, you know. But
in fact, I caught myself a couple times going, did I miss something at the end of that scene? Was there a button I missed?
Or something?
It just ended on that line.
Yeah. So this, and this, this is a little bit in your wheelhouse, but it feels a little bit like when Lucas made the first, the prequels basically. And there was, well, in that there's no one around to tell him, Seth, we can do better. This is okay, but we can do better.
Well, I argue with the ex-wife character, maybe. She's kind of there to kind of call him out.
Well, I'm talking about like from a writer's standpoint. I mean, like someone to say
so you're saying in real life, you're not the characters. You're saying,
That
somebody in the writer's room should be kind of saying, yeah, maybe this is not the best.
Yeah, it just felt like, well, you got Brandon Braga in there. You've got really smart people in there. Someone should say, Seth, we could do better. We can take another stab at this and make it funnier, make it better.
Yeah.
It's not terrible, but it's certainly.
But I think we've entered this zone too, where you know it's become a bad thing for the studio to be involved and give notes, which I totally, from an artist's perspective, I completely understand.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think if you're getting notes maybe from a more creative source than the studio, it's not such a bad thing. Like your fellow writers or the people that you're working with on that show.
Yeah.
To get some feedback probably doesn't hurt.
I absolutely. Someone should have stood up and said, Seth, I mean, let's take a look at this script. Let's take one more pass. Jon Favreau directed the pilot.
Yeah. And he was credited as a consultant on the second episode too.
Oh, was he? Okay. Like to me, like he's the one guy who can stand up to Seth and say, you know what? I've directed billion-dollar films. We can do better. You know, I've done Iron Man. Yeah. I've done, you know, all these films. But
I would have to say, I mean, the bottom line goes with him, right? I mean, he's he's the mastermind behind the whole thing.
Yeah, this is, and so it does, like as you were saying earlier, this does at times feel like a big cosplay, a big live action role play for Seth. You know, it's like the Truman Show where everyone's like, you know, playing, you know, make believe for him so he can sit in the captain's chair.
Yeah.
But it's not that bad. Like you said a B minus. I would give the first episode like a C plus maybe.
Yeah.
I liked the second episode a little better. But back to what you were saying, which was interesting. This whole minute, they basically lifted this episode's pilot or the second episode off of the pilot from Star Trek, The Cage.
Yeah.
Very, very like homage or parody or whatever. But here's the thing. When my wife and kids were watching this, they had a better play than the plot. Halfway through, as they're stuck in that little, and they're stuck in their house.
Right.
Before it was revealed it was a cage, my wife and kids all said, it's his parents. It's Ed Mercer's parents.
I'm sorry.
Oh, you didn't?
I heard you, but I'm not.
did I floor you with that?
I'm speechless.
It's so smart. It's so brilliant.
But it's his parents, meaning that they're the ones behind it?
Yes. That's like they said, like my 9-year-old kid said, oh, it's his parents. They want to get them back together again. So trapped them in their house so they can get back together.
Okay, I get what you're saying.
And I was like, that's brilliant. And like my wife said, yeah, those are the only people we've seen in this episode. They have to be the ones who are behind this. I'm like, that's actually really smart.
And then honestly, I thought they were the MVPs of the entire episode. They were the funniest thing in the episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just, I mean, you got Jeffrey Tambor.
He's gold whenever he's on screen.
God, and who is the woman? I can't remember.
I'm blanking on her name. She was all the way back from Bosom Buddies.
Oh my God, you're right. Yeah. Yes. Oh, Holland Taylor. Holland Taylor, and she was great too. And those, man, they were just getting together and improvising nonsense, weren't they? They were just having fun.
Yeah.
So good, but it did. like, it was funny because it went to the whole, well, let's do the homage to The Cage, and yet my kids, my wife had a better plot twist, right? That,
yeah,
you know, like, because the whole episode was like, oh, you know, your parents hate me. Now we're stuck in this house. What's this all about? Well, it's about your parents trying to get you back together. Instead, it took this weird hard right and did, you know, a very science fictiony thing.
Yeah.
But not the best.
Which I liked it. I actually liked the idea, especially that the ship was, you know, presenting itself as something different and disappeared. And because the scan was like the big reveal, I think, early on that something wasn't right there.
Yeah.
There's something going on. Why do they need to be scanned? And the parents' explanation was like, oh, that's why we scanned you, which made zero sense at all. So you're already, your antenna are kind of up as to something going on.
That's true. Yeah. I guess maybe they hid the ball a little too much on that. Maybe like even I was kind of like, oh, you know, but yeah, I'll give them that.
Because of the way, I mean, obviously we know those aren't his parents now, but the way that they treated the ex-wife, I felt was like it didn't give me the impression that they wanted them to get back together because they were kind of, you know, being a jerk to her by mentioning, oh, how are things since the infidelity?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's true. Yeah, I guess I can see that sort of kind of playing out like that. Maybe I missed that. We just watched this recently. So, I mean, I didn't mind the twist, but...
Yeah,
we could have gone for something more emotionally satisfying than aliens.
Well, I think the end to that twist could have been anything. It didn't have to be them being in a zoo. It was kind of clever. I mean, but at the same time, we've seen it before.
Yeah,
it's not entirely clever. It's not entirely original.
No. I mean, you know, it was fun and visually fun. Now, I have to say, the special effects in the show are outstanding. I mean,
yeah, they're great.
I mean, it just looks so good. When the probe exploded and people are flying all over the place and a guy fell down the staircase, like, they're spending real money on this.
Yeah.
I mean, it was good. But we could
which kind of brings up the concern of how good is Star Trek going to be?
Well, I know they're throwing a ton of money into Star Trek.
Well, they sure are. I mean, I don't know if I sent you the video, didn't I, of the construction of the ship set, the deck?
Yeah, it's going to be huge. It's going to be, I mean, they've spent, here it's like 8 to 10 million an episode, which is just insane. They're making a feature film, basically, with the amount of money. But did you send this to me? Maybe you did, where they're not allowing any early reviews of Star Trek?
No, I didn't send that to you, but it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, they're putting an embargo on reviewing the show, which doesn't bode well.
Well, when the lead actress, I'm blanking on her name, Green.
Sonequa Martin Green?
Yeah, Martin Green.
Yeah.
She was on CBS This Morning, which is, you know, obviously the network kind of home.
Yeah.
And she was giving an interview, and they said, they didn't send us anything. We can't watch an episode. We didn't see scenes. And meanwhile, they were kind of showing them on screen. Everybody's going, well, they're on screen right now. What are you talking about? But yeah. I did get the impression that even internally at CBS, nobody's allowed to know anything about it. Mm. So I think they might be either playing up that aspect of it's so secret we can't let anyone know. But at the same time, it's very easy to not let critics kind of see it ahead of time and tear it apart if it's not as good as people are hoping.
Yeah. You know, because I was back and forth, and one of their explanations is like, oh, we don't want to give away any spoilers like Game of Thrones. It's like,
right,
this is episode one. We know it's Star Trek. You know, there's nothing to be. And before we go on, I have to say this thing about because we have a lot of different things. We heard the theme song for this. But in the Orville, there is a passage in the second episode which they have directly paid homage to Star Trek II, James Horner's score. It is, it's where the girl is telling everyone what they're going to do for their plan. It is, if you listen to it, it's like note for note, just slightly different. And I was okay with that because I was like, oh, I like that. But as far as keeping this a lid on this, it makes sense until you think that CBS All Access wants as many people as possible to know about this show. So if they're hiding reviews, it just seems a little off.
Yeah.
So we'll find out. We did hear the theme song, though, for Star Trek Discovery. Yes.
You referred to as a bank commercial. Sounds like a bank commercial.
you agreed, though. It sounds like the middle.
I absolutely do. I mean, it doesn't sound like a theme song to a show at all.
It
sounds like background music, or it's kind of like, you know, if you bought the royalty-free music to use on your YouTube video.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, it's a very segmented theme. It has like three or four different movements to it, and the middle one really sounds like some guy in his 50s climbing rocks to get to his investment bank or something. It's very. I mean, there are parts that are inspiring. There are parts like we'll see. So. I don't know. I mean, the Star Trek Discovery is, we're going to have to see. We're going to know in 1 week. In 1 week, we'll know, and you'll know what we think about it.
That's the only important opinion, not your own.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. In 1 week, we will be having basically a talk back, almost live, probably streamed. I don't know. We'll figure that out. Jason will figure it out for us.
Yeah, sure, I'll figure it out.
Are there any thoughts you have about the Orville, Jason? We'll keep this short because, you know.
No, you know, I'm enjoying it so far. I mean, it's a, you know, a semi-funny show that's visually really appealing, and it has, you know, attractive people on it and some very funny people on it. So, I mean, like I said, so far, I think like a B minus from me. I'm maybe, you know, grading it on a curve. I think maybe you're probably a little more on the mark by saying it's maybe C plus or C minus. But I'm enjoying it. I can't say it's like one of my favorite shows really. But you know, it's enjoyable enough.
I
would continue watching.
Yeah. Here's the thing is like after the first episode, I was like, ooh, man, this is rough. It's just a rough show. And Seth, as we just mentioned, is not necessarily a leading actor yet. But then after watching the second episode, it felt very comfortable. You know, as a Star Trek Next Generation guy, you know, TOS guy, it felt like leftovers, you know, from a couple, it's like cold pizza, you know, it's like, it's not the best, but it's comforting. It's there. I know it's in the fridge. I'm going to eat it. So I'm going to watch more. I was surprised at how it made me feel a little bit like I was watching a weird dystopian, not dystopian, but like strange version of the Next Generation that didn't quite work, but had just enough to make me like it.
Yeah.
So I'll give it another try. I'll keep on going on this.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see once Star Trek comes out next week, what sort of, you know, grabbing your attention more.
This is true. This is true because they're both coming out on Sunday. Well, actually, they're moving to Thursdays now, the Orville, to get out of the way of.
Oh, okay.
Because I guess Star Trek is dropping. The first one's going to be on CBS, and then the next ones are going to be on CBS All Access.
Well, I think Sunday nights at this point of the year is kind of dumb for either of these shows because it's competing with Sunday Night Football, which is probably the highest rated thing on television for, you know, to start off the week.
Yeah.
Although, wise idea to put that up against that.
Well, this had the highest ratings of any drama in the past 2 years for Fox. So.
Yeah, but that was the first episode and it debuted after football or something, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they both happened. Yeah. Yeah, both of them premiered after football. So they do get that football bump. There's no question about it.
I suppose on the East Coast as well, it'd be competing directly with Sunday Night Football, but for it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Like once it goes to Thursday, when it's kind of in the middle of the week, are people going to keep on tuning in? You know, or will we all just forget about it and say, well, whatever. I'll give it another shot.
That's nothing to sneeze at, too. I mean, they had 11 million viewers the first week. That's huge. That's really big for a network to go. I mean, compared with like, you know, we make such a big deal about cable and everything, but the cable ratings are so much less than network ratings, just because of the nature of things. More people have access to the television networks, you know, especially even those without cable or satellite, that there's so many more eyeballs on it, and, you know, good for them.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is watching how Fox has marketed this as less of a, you know, comedy from Seth MacFarlane and more as, hey, this is going to be a fun, upbeat adventure show in outer space. Come watch it. Yeah. And I think people want to watch
that. One more
point
about the ratings. Their debut episode had higher ratings than the highest rated episode of Game of Thrones ever.
Yeah, oh, that's crazy. That's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's on free TV, but to have that level of retention from football, you know, people who are actively seeking
that out.
We'll
see this week whether they have the retention, you know. We'll see this week and next week.
And yeah, I think Thursday will be a big, you know, a big test because people are sampling. There's always that sampling, and then there's a drop off.
Right.
Right. But I would give this show at least a season, see how it turns out, and then maybe even one more to see if they could work it out and actually get something that's fun, light, frothy space adventure. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Or just cancel it prematurely and have a fan base for the next 20, 30 years.
This is true.
Because they'll be so angry about the cancellation that they'll suddenly love it 10 times more.
Exactly. And then there'll be Orville conventions. Now, yes. I'll be interested to see next year's Star Trek convention if people are going to be dressed up in Orville outfits. I would not be surprised.
Well, they recently had the Galaxy Quest anniversary screening, and it was a big deal. Here in Los Angeles, you know, the cast was there, and I guess it was a, you know, sellout crowd, and people were really into it.
It's such a great show. I, you know, we haven't talked about that, but we should. The guy who wrote it wants to be on this podcast. We got to get him on it.
Really? So. Oh, that's cool.
Well, I don't know if he wants to be on the podcast, but I know he wants to talk to me.
He just wants to talk to you off the record.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I ran into him.
What are you doing to Star Trek?
Yeah, you're ruining everything. No, he saw me walking out of a Disney building one time because he was working. I told you this before. And he's like, Mike McCafferty? No. I'm like, yeah. He's like, hey, my name is, and I can't remember his name. He's like, I wrote Galaxy Quest. I'm a big fan of yours. I'm like, no, I am a big fan of yours. Stop that.
Yeah.
But he gave me his email, and then, like, I emailed him. I'm like, hey, man. And then, like, 2 days later, like, Netflix announced that they're going to develop a series around him, around Galaxy Quest. Oh. And then I felt really, like, yeah, awkward about, you know, hey, man, good to hear from you. Let's talk about what's up in your life, you know. And he never responded until, like, a year and a half later. He's like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I never checked this email because of XYZ. But, yes, let's totally get together. So we should have him on.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, but we'll have him on after Star Trek Discovery has had its run.
Yes.
We're in the final stretch. 1 week away, friend.
Yes.
And you're going to be there if you can.
This for the past couple of years, it seems like.
What's that?
We've been talking about this for the past couple of years, and it's finally upon us.
I know. All last year, we were talking about when Star Trek Discovery is going to happen, and now it's a week away.
Yeah.
And all we've been talking about is another TV show. Because that's how we roll here on this podcast. We don't
care.
That's
by design. Well done.
Yeah. All right, we're gonna cap this one off here on behalf of the Orville. Thank you so much for listening. Check out our next podcast. It's gonna be about Star Trek Discovery. It's gonna be amazing. And we're gonna have
mostly from a technical standpoint, because I'll be in charge of the whole episode.
Yes, and we'll finally get good audio for once. And well, I'm going to invite everyone who's ever been on the podcast is going to come over, I hope. So we'll have
a
big grouping of people. Fun. Yeah. We'll see who actually shows up. It might be just you, me, and the doctor. Will she even be around or no? She's back.
That's a good question. She's back. She gets back this Thursday, I believe.
Oh, does
Scotland.
She? Yeah. What?
Thursday or Friday?
Let's see. When is she back? She said it. It doesn't matter.
The 21st.
Oh, the 21st. She's back. So, yeah. So she'll be back in time. So she'll be there. Jason will be there.
Yeah. So we can speak for her. She'll be there.
She's going to be there, damn it. After 15 years of no Star Trek, she's going to show up. and you're going to show up, and the audience is going to show up because of us. We've done it, Jason. Yes. We win. All right. Thank you for listening. I'm Mike McCafferty.
And I'm Jason McCarris.
And I just want to talk about
Star Trek.
Comes in, everybody rides.
Your daddy can put them up, can he?
Rock a somber, emotional state.
Hello, I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. He's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Pataki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Oh.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, yeah. He's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a
bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a rich...
I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat. She's a cat.
My girlfriend's a cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat.
I help people.
She's a cat. We fight a penguin.
My